Stephen Shipley. Coming up in 15 minutes after the news, today's Woman's Hour talks to Keira Knightley on her latest screen incarnation. And while politicians court the vote of working parents by making the case for childcare that wraps around the school day, Woman's Hour discusses the arguments for and against a long day for children. On Radio 4 FM now, our book of the week, The Shivago Affair by Peter Finn and Petra Kuvey, the story of a forbidden book that became a symbol of freedom and rebellion in the battle between East and West. After the Russian Revolution of 1917 and the assassination of Tsar Nicholas II, the Soviets seized control of the country city by city. The reader is Nigel Anthony.
Boris Pasternak was 27 by the time Moscow fell to the Bolsheviks. He and his sisters, who came from a prominent family within Moscow's artistic intelligentsia, welcomed the fall of the monarchy, the emergence of a new provisional government, and above all, the prospect of a constitutional political order. Just imagine when an ocean of blood and filth begins to give out light, Pasternak told one friend. He would later channel the sense of euphoria into his novel, Dr. Zhivago. Mother Russia has begun to move. She won't stay put. She walks and never tires of walking. She talks and can't talk enough. It seemed to Zhivago that the roof over the whole of Russia has been torn off. The revolution was followed by a devastating civil war between the Red Army and the anti-Bolshevik forces, the Whites. Moscow was a society where novels, poems and plays were hugely significant forms of communication and entertainment. The Soviet public longed for great writing with a desire that was rarely sated, and writers were a privileged caste. They were organised into the nearly 4,000-strong Union of Soviet Writers and lavished with perks unimaginable for ordinary Soviet citizens who often lived in tiny spaces and had to queue for basic goods. While he was a student at Moscow University, Pasternak had attended a salon of young authors, musicians and poets, a tipsy society that mixed artistic experimentation with rum-laced tea. And he wrote poetry as one paints or composes music. His first standalone publication of poetry appeared in 1913, but neither it nor a second volume published in 1917 received much attention. In 1922, Pasternak married Yevgenia Lurier. They lived in a small section of the Pasternak family's old apartment, now divided among six families. Hemmed in on all sides by noise, he complained that often he could only work on his poetry at night when silence fell over the house, staying awake with cigarettes and hot tea. The previous year, the White forces, who opposed the Bolsheviks, had been defeated, and the Civil War was over. Literary life was slowly rekindling in the ruined country. Pasternak's next volume of poetry, My Sister Life, was published in 1922, and drew euphoric, head-turning reviews that announced the entry of a giant. To read Pasternak's verse is to clear your throat, to fortify your breathing, to fill your lungs. Surely such poetry could provide a cure for tuberculosis, said the poet Ossip Mandelstam. Pasternak had arrived, and it did not take the Soviet leadership long to notice. In June 1922, Pasternak was summoned to the Revolutionary Military Council for a meeting with Leon Trotsky, the head of the Red Army, a man who felt that no one in Russia who challenged the Soviet order, even in novels, deserved official toleration. The two men chatted for more than half an hour. Trotsky wanted to find out if Pasternak was willing to commit his lyrical talent and subsume his individuality to a greater cause, the revolution. Pasternak, who had a natural willingness to express his opinions in a society where people filtrated their words for ideological reasons, talked at length and said his answers to Trotsky amounted to a defence of true individualism. 10 years later, this view is echoed in the words of his alter ego, Dr. Zhivago, who rejects the Soviet philosophy once it becomes incompatible with the ideal of free personality. Pasternak was never openly hostile to Soviet power, and his attitude to the men in the Kremlin swung between fascination and loathing. Before 1930, he wrote poetry in praise of both Lenin and Stalin, and he was for a time transfixed by Stalin's guile and authority. In the summer of 1930, Pasternak found himself increasingly attracted to Zinuida Negauts, the wife of his best friend, with whom the Pasternaks had holidayed in Ukraine. By early the next year, Zinuida confessed the affair to her husband. With more than a measure of narcissism, Pasternak argued that he could maintain his marriage and pursue his affair with Zinuida while remaining above reproach. He never wanted to cause anyone grief, but he did, said a friend. Eventually, Yevgenia went to Germany with her young son, leaving Boris and Zinuida free to consort together. Pasternak married Zinuida in 1934, after his divorce from Yevgenia. For him, she was a homemaker who allowed him the physical and emotional space to work. One evening in April the same year, Pasternak ran into Osip Mandelstam. The poet, passionate, opinionated, and a brilliant conversationalist, was also a dyspeptic and incautious critic of the regime. On the street, he recited some new verse, deeply unflattering to Stalin. "I didn't hear this. You didn't recite it to me," said Pasternak, "because you know very dangerous things are happening now." He implored Mandelstam not to recite it to anyone else. Mandelstam didn't listen, and inevitably he was betrayed. The secret police appeared at Mandelstam's apartment in the early morning of May the 17th. Pasternak interceded with Nikolai Bukharin, the recently appointed editor of the daily newspaper Izvestia. In a message Bukharin sent to Stalin in June 1934, he added a postscript. "Pasternak is completely bewildered by Mandelstam's arrest." The entreaties worked, and Mandelstam, who could have been accused of terrorism and sent to almost certain death at a forced labour camp, was allowed to admit to the relatively mild offence of composing and distributing counter-revolutionary works. Stalin issued a decisive and chilling command that was passed down the chain: isolate, but preserve. Mandelstam was sentenced to 3 years in exile in the Urals. In 1936, Stalin began a series of show trials, macabre pieces of theatre that would, over the next 2 years, mow down the old revolutionary leadership. Close to 250,000 people were killed because they were members of national minorities, deemed a threat to state security. The country was in the grip of a deranged, pitiless slaughter. In June the following year, Pasternak was asked to sign a petition supporting the death penalty for a group of military defendants. When an official arrived at his dacha, he ran him off, shouting, "I know nothing about them. I don't give them life, and I have no right to take it away." He wrote to Stalin, "I did not consider I was entitled to sit in judgment over the life and death of others." When the letter of condemnation appeared the next day, Pasternak's signature had been added. He was furious, but safe. That he lived left him with a fear that some might believe he had somehow colluded to save himself. Around him people disappeared, their fate suspected but unconfirmed. Osip Mandelstam died in the Gulag Archipelago in December 1938. Pasternak had begun to write Dr. Zhivago in 1937. He had an uncompromising certainty that the novel was the culmination of his life's work, a deeply authentic expression of his vision, and superior to all of the celebrated poetry he had produced over many decades. "My Final Happiness and Madness," he called it. Both epic and autobiographical, the novel revolves around the doctor-poet, Yuri Zhivago, his art, loves, and losses in the decades surrounding the 1917 Russian Revolution. Zhivago is Pasternak's sometime alter ego. Both character and writer are from a lost past, the cultured milieu of the Moscow intelligentsia. As the story evolved, Pasternak realized that Dr. Zhivago would stand as a rebuke to the short history of the Soviet state. In October 1941, as Nazi forces approached Moscow, Pasternak, along with other writers, was evacuated to Chistopol, a small town of 25,000 people. He subsisted there for nearly 2 years on thin cabbage soup and black bread. It was a drab, cold existence, but he continued to earn a living through his translations. Pasternak was back in Moscow by 1944 and received encouragement to reach for greater artistic heights. The poet, Anna Akhmatova, who had been evacuated to Uzbekistan, arrived in Moscow carrying a letter for Pasternak from Osip Mandelstam, written 2 years before he perished. Mandelstam, who had once warned Pasternak that his translation work would overwhelm his original creations, said in the letter, "I want your poetry, by which we have all been spoiled and undeservedly gifted, to leap further out into the world. Thank you for everything, and for the fact that this everything is still not everything." Dr. Zhivago began to come into focus as Pasternak worked on it intensely in the winter months of 1945 and 1946, and his ambitions for it grew. This is a very serious work. He became absorbed with the writing. "I could not go on living another year unless this novel, my alter ego, went on living and growing too." Like many of his contemporaries, Pasternak was alert enough to observe that the seemingly relaxed post-war atmosphere was eroding as tensions with the Western powers grew into the Cold War. The crackdown on the intelligentsia began in August 1946. The targets initially were the satirical writer Mikhail Zhoshenko and Anna Akhmatova. Pasternak was removed from the board of the Union of Soviet Writers when he failed to attend a meeting called to denounce them. Pasternak continued with readings of the earlier part of the novel at his home in Perodelkino, a writer's colony built on the former estate of a Russian nobleman. Pasternak also continued to read drafts to small gatherings in Moscow, and these gatherings began to attract unwelcome attention. The secret police were monitoring the soirees and noting the book's contents for the moment when they would strike. Official criticism of Pasternak reached a pitch in 1947 in a virulent signed piece by the poet Alexei Sukhov in a newspaper. Sukhov charged that Pasternak had a reactionary backward-looking ideology, that he speaks with obvious hostility and even hatred about the Soviet Revolution. Then the journal Novy Mir rejected some of his poems. Next, the publication of his translated Shakespeare compendium was put on hold. 25,000 printed copies of his poetry were destroyed on orders from above on the eve of distribution. Pasternak's attitude to the state, which had fluctuated between ambivalence and cautious embrace, was now consistently, if quietly, hostile.
Episode 1 of The Zhivago Affair by Peter Finn and Petra Kuvy was read by Nigel Anthony, abridged by Libby Spurrier and produced by Joanna Green. It's a peer production for BBC Radio 4. Coming up after the news, Woman's Hour talks to Keira Knightley about her new film, the rom-com Begin Again, which is released this week. Plus how to lower cholesterol, staying sane, and this.
Life's real tough, man. Even for the stinking rich.
The residents of 28 Barbary Lane are back.
Dore decided to stay. She thinks being a socialist is more important than being a lesbian.
A racy, witty portrait of San Francisco in the 1980s.
Marianne's just now learning to fly, and it takes longer if you come from Cleveland.
Further Tales of the City, Monday to Friday at 10:45 on BBC Radio 4.